This is the Sex and Psychology Podcast, and it's the sex ed you never got in school and won't get anywhere else. I am your host, Dr. Justin Lehmiller. I am a social psychologist and research fellow at the Kinsey Institute and author of the book, Tell Me What You Want, The Science of Sexual Desire and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. Trauma is common. Studies show that 70% of adults have experienced one or more traumatic events in their lifetime. Trauma can take a lot of different forms, but one of the most common is sexual trauma, and this can have some very serious effects on people's lives. There's a popular narrative in the media that trauma is lifelong because it fundamentally changes our bodies and brains, which can easily give the impression that it's something that never resolves. However, there is hope. And that's what we're going to be talking about on today's show. We're going to discuss what sexual trauma means, some of the ways that it can impact us, and how sex therapists work with their clients to work through trauma, including how to shed feelings of shame and guilt, as well as how to reconnect with your body and experience pleasurable sex again. We'll also talk about how to bring up sexual trauma with a partner and how you can be a supportive partner if you're with someone who has experienced trauma. My guest is Amanda Jepson, a licensed professional counselor and ASEX-certified sex therapist. She is one of the co-founders of the nonprofit ReSpark Foundation, a clinical therapist at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs Veterans Health and Trauma Clinic, and a lecturer for the University of Colorado, Denver. This is going to be a very important and practical conversation. Stick around, and we're going to jump in right after the break. Are you passionate about building a career in sexuality? Look no further than the Sexual Health Alliance. With SHA, you'll connect with world-class experts and join an engaged community of sexuality professionals from all around the world. Whether you're just beginning your journey or are in the process of building advanced skills, SHA's comprehensive certifications, engaging events, and self-paced online training will move you beyond the basics and set you up to be a rising star in the field. Visit sexualhealthalliance.com and start building the sexuality career of your dreams today. Hi, Amanda, and welcome to the Sex and Psychology Podcast.
Hi.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and I'm really looking forward to our conversation. But before we dive in, let me first ask you how you got into the world of sex therapy. So what is it that drew you to this field?
I started off doing work in trauma. I started off working at a rape and sexual abuse center when I was an intern. So jumped right in the deep end of trauma work. And what I noticed pretty profoundly was everybody was having impacts in their relationships, in sex, in the ability to experience positive things, experience pleasure. And so trying to figure out how to help my clients kind of recoup their full life, I kind of stumbled across sex therapy as an option, and it has been an amazing tool to use with clients.
Thanks for sharing that. And it's such important work that you do because, as you said, you know, sexual trauma can have these wide-ranging impacts on people in a lot of ways. And so it's really important to have people who can help people figure out how to deal with that because a lot of us don't know how to do that on our own, and we need the help of a skilled therapist to be able to do so. So sexual trauma is the topic for today's show, and I always like to start with definitions so that everybody's on the same page. So let's start by talking about what sexual trauma can mean. And I think this is important because trauma is obviously a broad term in and of itself, but it's also a very subjective term because two people could experience something that seems objectively similar, but it might only be traumatic for one person, but not for the other. So as a therapist, what does the term sexual trauma mean to you, or what does it mean in a clinical context?
I actually appreciate the fact that you're starting off talking about definitions, because when we look at our diagnostic model, when we listen to other people in the field, the definitions vary so much, and oftentimes are clinicians making the decision whether or not something is traumatic, or intentionally leaving out really distressing and disturbing events just because they don't include death. And so I use the general definition of trauma, that is, trauma is merely the response to a deeply distressing or disturbing event that overwhelms someone's ability to cope, causes feelings of helplessness, diminishes their sense of who they are as a person, and affects their ability to feel the full range of emotions. So when I'm talking about sexual trauma, it would be an experience that is related to sex that has those same impacts. So essentially, a sexual experience that affects somebody in both their perception and their response.
I appreciate that definition. And I also appreciate what you said about how, you know, in a therapeutic context and also in the sex literature, sex research literature more broadly, there are divergent definitions of what counts as trauma. And, you know, some people define it in very narrow ways, focused on a very specific sexual act. And then that gets into the question of, well, is this the therapist or researcher supplied definition of what trauma is? And we're assuming that anybody who experienced this necessarily has trauma, or is it from the perspective of the person who actually experienced that event? And is it based on their subjective perception of whether that is trauma or not? And so the researcher definitions and actual people's definitions don't always match up. And so that's why it's really important to have that subjective component of what does this mean to the individual and is it distressing for them? So this definitional issue makes it really tricky to pinpoint something like what is the prevalence of sexual trauma, because you're going to get drastically different estimates across studies depending on how you define it. But what we do know is that it is common and it has a wide range of effects on people. So what are some of the most common impacts of sexual trauma that you see in your practice?
So the population that I work with right now, I work with active duty military, veteran military, and first responders. So when I talk about trauma, I'm working with individuals that have had incredibly complex trauma throughout their lifespan in different ways. And so I see people that have more general outside of sex effects. So issues with mood, issues with being able to feel happiness or joy in their day-to-day life, people with self-esteem issues. We might see difficulty coping that's going to lead to self-harm, substance use, using sex in unhealthy ways. But we'll talk later about how you can use sex in a healthy way. We're going to see nightmares and flashbacks. But when it comes to sex, we're going to start to see a decrease in desire and a decrease in the interest in sex, difficulty being vulnerable and trusting others. We're going to see issues coming up where they're going to want to avoid any reminders of the negative experiences. So if somebody has had sexual trauma, oftentimes that leads to not wanting to be in sexy contexts, oftentimes not wanting to experience sexual touch. And for some people, it's not even wanting to feel their body have sexual arousal. And so that avoidance piece gets really, really big. For some of my people, it might be difficulty in communicating. And so that can mean sometimes saying yes when they really mean no. And that can happen in sex or in other areas of their life. Lots of feelings of guilt and shame. Specifically, sometimes about the experiences that they had that were related to the trauma, but also they start to feel guilty not showing up in the relationship the way that they, quote unquote, should be showing up. The fact that they don't have desire, the fact that they're not able to connect with their partner. And I also see individuals that might engage in testing their partner or partners to make sure that the person is a good fit. But of course, people usually can't pass those tests. Or sometimes individuals engaging in sex or sexual connections instead of emotional connections. And again, sometimes that can be navigated safely and in a healthy way. But in this sort of situation, it's not necessarily healthy or safe for the person.
Yeah. So a very wide range of impacts and highly variable across individuals. And, you know, as you were talking about the specific population that you tend to work with, I couldn't help but think about how for some of them, you know, if we're talking about sexual trauma, it might not be trauma themselves that they've endured, but it might be working with other people who have endured some type of trauma and how that can be a totally different element to add to all of this. You know, for people who work in, say, a rape crisis center or who are first responders or otherwise work with people who are victims of sexual assault or sexual violence, can you just speak briefly about, you know, what is the impact of being witness to all of that trauma in everyday life for you, even though it's not your own trauma?
Yep. So we absolutely have primary trauma, right? That's the trauma that you experience firsthand. But that vicarious trauma absolutely profoundly has an effect as well. And we know that the nervous system experiences it as traumatic, even if we're hearing about it secondhand. And so paying attention to the potential for vicarious trauma or quote unquote lesser experience with it is of even burnout is really important. And we'll see the exact same responses in individuals experiencing vicarious trauma.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I love that term, vicarious trauma. It makes so much sense because you don't necessarily have to have experienced that, but by virtue of working with or being empathetic for people who have endured sexual trauma, you're experiencing it in a way as well, and that can have those wide-ranging impacts too.
Absolutely.
So before we get into therapy with persons with sexual trauma, I just want to address what seems to be a common misconception about trauma, which is that if you have trauma, you're quote unquote damaged goods, right? So in popular media, there's this big narrative out there about how trauma is lifelong and how it fundamentally changes both the body and brain. You know, there's this idea out there of the body keeps score. And it can kind of give the impression that there's just no getting over trauma, which feels pretty bleak. So is there hope? Can you heal? What's the answer there?
Yes. I think the biggest thing is understanding that our evidence-based interventions that we use show that overwhelmingly, as long as people are able to stay in there and complete the treatment, that the vast majority, and I think the last study I read of over 90% of people no longer meet the criteria for PTSD after treatment. Now, that does not mean that they cannot be re-triggered. That does not mean that they may not have to go through maintenance therapy later to kind of readdress it. But the very fascinating thing is once the trauma has been processed, it gets to be filed and put away just like any other memory. Like I tell my clients, it's like when you think back to your fifth birthday, when you got like the coolest gift you ever got, you don't re-experience that memory now as though you were that like bouncing off the walls five-year-old. You're like, yeah, that was pretty cool. Trauma memories are going to have the same thing where you're going to be able to think back to them and say, that was really difficult. And then the memory goes back to where it goes. You're not going to experience it at that triggered, overwhelmed place anymore. So yes, absolutely, there's hope. If there wasn't hope, it would be hard to do trauma work.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that's very optimistic and also very reassuring. And it runs counter to this narrative that we hear all the time about these lifelong impacts of trauma. And I've actually seen some people who seem to be very uncomfortable with or try to discredit studies showing that people get over trauma because they seem to be invested in this idea that trauma should cause permanent, lifelong negative impacts. And I think the fact that people are resilient is good news and that we can heal from trauma. Like, we want that to be the outcome. So it just seems weird to me that some people just really want to invest in that idea that trauma just permanently damages us because, like I said, it's pretty bleak.
One of the things that I notice with that is it comes up more when we have incentivized staying in the trauma responses. So I work with veterans, right? They get a rating from the VA and they lose their benefits if they lose diagnoses, if they heal and get better. So there ends up being an unintentional incentive to stay hurting. When I look at individuals who have started to identify as the traumas that they've experienced, it's harder to heal from them. It's harder to move through them because that trauma becomes a part of who they are and how they define themselves. And so sometimes part of the work is identifying what ways they have personalized the experience and ways that they may have lost themselves in that experience. And so that becomes part of the work is understanding that that trauma is never going to go away. And you may have some parts of yourself that are forever altered, but that doesn't have to be a negative experience. It can become an aspect of resilience.
I love that answer. And I love that I invited you on the show because this is amazing food for thought. And I think you explain all of this so incredibly well. So let's talk about coping with sexual trauma. You know, the first step, of course, would be acknowledging it and seeking help. And sometimes that would mean seeking the help or services of a therapist. So my question is, how do you know when it's time to see a therapist for sexual trauma? And what do you look for in a therapist? So for example, there are all kinds of providers out there who call themselves trauma-informed therapists. But what does that mean, right? So when is it time to see a therapist and what should you look for?
My first big disclaimer is we know that 75% of adults walking around have at least one major significant trauma in their life. So we know based on the research that the vast majority of people and the vast majority of trauma does heal on its own. When I recommend that people come in for more help is if they notice that they're not able to move past it, if they're not able to cope, so that traumatic impact of it moves you beyond your coping strategies and you start to lose yourself. If you notice you're stuck in that cycle and it's affecting work, it's affecting your relationships, it's affecting your connection with self, it's affecting your sex life, I usually recommend finding a therapist or a therapy group to kind of help you with that. And it's more if it's an extended period of time, I would say more than 6 months, more than a year. Though we have some really cool research that shows getting into treatment within 4 weeks of that trauma significantly decreases the likelihood that you will have lifelong experience with the trauma impacts. But most people like to give it a go to work through it themselves. When it comes to what you want to look for in a therapist, I highly recommend seeing what their specific training is. It's one thing to be trauma-informed, and that just means that the therapist has an understanding of or specific training or specific supervision. There's no definition for trauma-informed idea that trauma can affect people. That's good. I would much rather clients find a trauma-informed therapist than somebody who was not. But what you want is a therapist that has training specifically in treating trauma. And so that might mean cognitive processing therapy. That might mean eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. That might mean CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. But you want to talk with a therapist about how do you treat trauma and did you get specific training for this? And I also strongly recommend talking with a therapist before you choose them, because one of the biggest indicators of success beyond those specific interventions that therapists use is the match between the therapist and the client. So having a good feeling about your therapist leads to better outcomes.
Yeah, I think you make a lot of important points there. And, you know, it can be hard when you're searching for a therapist because you'll see a lot of the same terms thrown about over and over, like trauma-informed therapist or LGBTQ affirming or polyamory affirming. And sometimes these terms are just kind of meaningless because it can literally just mean like, okay, I affirm your identity, or I know something about trauma. It doesn't necessarily tell you about their training or background or credentials. And so I think you're right. It's do a deep dive and try and figure out, what does this person know? Where were they trained? And are they likely to be able to have the skill set to help me with the specific issues that I need? And then also that piece of, do you feel that connection or that rapport with the individual? And I often like to say, you know, your first session is kind of like interviewing each other to make sure you're a good fit. And sometimes a person just isn't going to be the right therapist for you. So before you commit to one person and potentially doing months and in some cases years of therapy, you want to make sure it's a good fit.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you highlighted the fact that clients are also interviewing the therapist. A lot of times clients think that it's a one-way interview, and it absolutely is not. It has to be a good fit for the client for it to be successful.
Now, one of the big things that comes up in therapy around sexual trauma is feelings of shame and guilt. So for example, some people blame themselves for what happened or for not stopping it. Other people have fantasies that connect to the trauma in some way that make them feel ashamed, such as a sexual assault survivor who has fantasies about forced sex. So how do you help clients work through things like shame and guilt?
One of the biggest things that I tell clients is when trauma has occurred, every response to that trauma is a normal response because it's a response to an abnormal experience that we had. And I think that no matter how you respond to it, it speaks to how strong the individual is and how they were able to essentially protect themselves in the aftermath. And the human mind is incredibly creative. That's the first thing is I tell clients is, you know, for most people, they are not the only ones that responded to their trauma in the way that they did. And then we'll talk a lot about why those individual responses are coming up. What's the mechanism happening for them? Because oftentimes it makes so much sense when you put it in context of their other experiences. We'll talk about the nervous system and fight and flight, freeze, and all of the other ways that we can respond, and understanding that oftentimes people develop a pattern of which one that they default to. We will work a lot on healing, essentially, that nervous system response. So getting people out of fight or flight. And a lot of times just being able to come out of that fight or flight changes the guilt and shame response. Because for a lot of individuals, that's a response because they're so heightened all the time. They're trying to find places to lay blame. And it's oftentimes easiest to lay blame on yourself because retroactively, that gives you the ability to have changed the outcome. And that's not how it works at all.
Yeah. No, you're so right that the easiest target to blame is often yourself in these cases. And I think that's what underlies so much of the shame and guilt and why that's such a common phenomenon here. And I think something else that's also important in some of these cases, especially when it relates to sexual fantasies. You know, that's a topic that I do a lot of work on, and I see a lot of people who have fantasies about forced sex, and many of them, certainly not all of them, have histories of sexual assault or sexual trauma. And then there's this complex emotional reaction to that where people feel guilty about that. You know, why am I turned on by something that was this big source of trauma? Are these things even connected? And so, you know, it can be a very difficult thing to work through with the client. But I think an important cognitive reframe is that in the case of people who have forced sex fantasies, like, A, let's stop calling them rape fantasies because they're really not fantasies about sexual assault. And when they happen, when in these fantasies, you are in control. You pick who your partner is and how the scenario starts and ends and what unfolds. And I think oftentimes in these cases, the fantasy can be therapeutic in a way of sort of taking control of a situation in which you didn't previously have control. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. So in addition to working with trauma survivors, I work with people who have lots of different interests, including kinky people. And so talking through the fantasies that people experience or the actual activities that they want to engage in, and just acknowledging and normalizing that even individuals that didn't experience sexual trauma also have these interests. And so this is just something that sometimes humans are attracted to or excited by. And if it is related to negative experiences that you've had, it's a way of reclaiming power and shifting the dynamic. And so, like you said, it means you get to dictate what's allowed and what's not allowed. You get to dictate who it's with, whether it's in your head or something that you are choosing to act out. There's a lot more control for that individual. And it can be incredibly empowering and healing to give yourself permission to explore that fantasy, at least in your head.
Right. So thanks for sharing that. Now, another common thing that comes up in cases of sexual trauma is that people often feel disconnected from their bodies. For example, they might feel numb, or they might feel as though they can only enjoy sex if they engage in some kind of escapism, such as substance use. So in cases like this, how can people learn how to reconnect with their bodies and start to experience sex as pleasurable again?
Absolutely. And that's such a good point. For a lot of people, it really is spending that time being present in yourself and being present in the moment. And so that might mean doing things like doing self-hugs. So just being able to grab your own shoulders and hug and hold on. It might mean meditation, where there's a guided protocol bringing you through being present in your body. It may mean engaging in sensate focus with a partner, which is non-directed, non-sexual, sensual touch, just reacquainting yourself with what touch you like to receive and what touch you don't, and remapping your own body. That can be done with just yourself, or that can be done with a partner. It's just learning how to be present in any given time so that you know that you can ensure that the yeses that you are giving are yeses that you want to give, and giving yourself permission to say no if something does not feel right.
So there are obviously a lot of different therapeutic techniques that might be employed in dealing with people with trauma. You know, we've talked about working through shame and guilt and cognitive reframing. We've talked about mindfulness, meditation, other sorts of exercises to help people connect with their bodies. What are some of the other techniques that might be used? I mean, obviously, it's going to depend on the therapist's training, because different people are going to have different specialties, and it's going to depend on the needs of the client. But what are some other common treatments that might come up in cases of sexual trauma?
A lot of clinicians are going to use narrative therapy. So narrative therapy is talking through the story that you tell yourself about the trauma that you experienced, identifying the pieces of the narrative that may have been handed to you, whether by society or by the perpetrator, that don't really fit you, and actually working on rewriting that script, essentially, and reclaiming pieces of power. Some clinicians are going to use internal family systems, and that's understanding that we all have different parts of ourselves, and those different parts are going to experience or protect an individual from the trauma in different ways, and working to kind of bring all of those different parts together to make decisions. They all get a seat at the table, essentially. But for the most part, all of the different ways of treating trauma has to do with understanding the ways in which the trauma affected you or changed you, and working on helping you get back to a better, healthier, more realistic baseline. And that might mean some of those effects of the trauma stay with you, but you're operating from a place where you understand what's real versus what was a story that you were given.
Yeah. So all different kinds of techniques. And that's another thing to think about when you're looking at a therapist. You know, if you're trying to find somebody who's a good fit for you, you might go for somebody who has different training or different expertise, depending on the nature of the trauma itself. And, you know, for example, you mentioned family systems therapy. And so if there was trauma that involved a particular family member or something like that, then that might be a key thing that you would look for in terms of the type of therapist that you're seeking out, because not all therapists are interchangeable. You know, they all have different training, different background, different expertise. Many of them will come at the same issue from totally different ways. And so I think that's something else that's important to keep in mind too, is that if you're working with a therapist for a while and it just doesn't seem to be working with them, it might be time for a new therapist and a new approach and trying something different, right?
Absolutely. And we don't take that personally. We want people to get better. And if we're not the best fit for you, either we can make recommendations or we are totally happy to let you go find somebody who will be a good fit for you. That's all that we're looking for.
Yeah. Now, for someone who has sexual trauma and their partner doesn't know about it, how do you bring this up? Can you share any tips with us on discussing a very sensitive topic like this with a partner?
Oftentimes, it's starting slow. Individuals that have experienced trauma kind of end up at one end of a pendulum, then the other. Either they trust no one, or sometimes they may share a little bit too much too soon. And so understanding that trust and intimacy is built slowly over time. You share a little bit at a time. And it can just start with, you know, I've had some bad experiences in my life and I'm still working through them, right? And that can be all that you need to mention. It can be sometimes I'm really uncomfortable with certain kind of touches, and you don't have to explain why quite yet. And as you become more comfortable and as you become safer to be more vulnerable in the relationship, you can talk more about what happened. But I usually say checking in with yourself, checking in with your partner, and getting their consent first before you do share is really important. And if you are in therapy, sometimes that can be a good use of your therapy sessions too, is inviting your partner in and sharing the story in the presence of your therapist, with your therapist helping explain. I've had clients bring partners into sessions to be able to talk through the myths about sexual trauma, talk about the ways in which the partner can help support them, and really make sure that they're able to discuss how it affected them.
Yeah. So self-disclosure is something that I think is both an art and a science, right? So, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, there are some best practices we can see in the literature, because if you disclose too much too soon, you run the risk of it being too much too soon, and the other person might be scared off from that, and because you don't have the trust and intimacy with them, right? But also, you got to find the right time and how to do this, and not everything has to come out all at once, and you can slowly build up to it over a period of time. So there are no 100% right, wrong answers in terms of how to approach this, and it might take a bit of trial and error in terms of when and how do you disclose this to other people. Now, a parallel question to that is, let's say your partner discloses sexual trauma to you. How can you best be a supportive partner to them?
Absolutely. Making sure that you have your own skills to sit and listen to that. So regulating your nervous system, bringing in your skills to be able to cope with what they're telling you. Understanding that it's not your job to fix the situation. It's not your job to avenge the situation, and building a lot of internal patience, being prepared to move slowly, being prepared to listen and validate and empathize, and also being able to still speak up and advocate for your needs in the relationship as well. I think both individuals, regardless of trauma, sometimes when the other person is hurting or disclosing, the person receiving that information feels like, okay, I'm not allowed to take up space. I can't need anything. It's just about navigating when it's a good time to have that conversation as well.
Yeah. Thank you so much for all of this amazing information. You know, before I started this show with you, I was like, oh my gosh, sexual trauma is a really hard topic to talk about in general. And how are we going to cover all of this and its important depth and nuance in a short period of time. And you explained it all so well, so concisely. And I just love your answers. And I think you really helped to make this topic that's really hard to talk about, one that is very easy to talk about. So I can only imagine that you're an incredibly amazing and skilled therapist in helping your clients.
Well, thank you so much. I like getting to talk about it because I think it's important to decrease the stigma because we know that it's incredibly common and that it affects a lot of people. And so sometimes the easier we can talk about it, my hope is it's easier for other people to talk about it as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this amazing conversation, Amanda. It was a pleasure to have you here. Can you please tell my listeners where they can go to learn more about you and your work?
Absolutely. So primary place you can find out more about me is ReSpark Foundation. That's the nonprofit that I run that serves survivors of sexual harm from a sex positive and trauma-informed perspective. Other than that, you can learn more about me on the UCCS Veterans Health and Trauma Clinic website. So that's where I do all of my work with veterans, active duty, and first responders.
Well, thank you again so much for your time and thank you for the important work that you do. I really appreciate having you here.
Absolutely. Thank you for the fantastic conversation.
Thank you for listening. To keep up with new episodes of this podcast, visit my website, Sex and Psychology, at sexandpsychology.com, or subscribe on your favorite platform, where I hope you'll take a moment to rate and review the show. You can also follow me on the socials for daily sex research updates. I'm on Twitter and TikTok at Justin Lehmiller and Instagram at Justin J. Lehmiller. Also, be sure to check out my book, Tell Me What You Want. And if you have a question you'd like me to answer on a future episode of this show, you can leave me a podcast voicemail at speakpipe.com/sexandpsychology. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.